Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We're back on Janae and Golic Jr., Katie George and Courtney Cronin, rounding out the final hour of Janae and Golic Jr. on this fine Friday afternoon. This lovely show is presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline, and we'll chat with Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, in just a moment. He's covering the New Orleans Saints. Their game against the Cardinals just got canceled. They moved it up from an 8 p.m. kick to a 1 p.m. kick tomorrow afternoon. Unfortunately, due to Hurricane Ida, though, they have since decided that they are going to cancel that third preseason game. And good thing Jameis Winston really went out and showed out on Monday night against the Jags, Courtney, because he locked up that starting position. I couldn't imagine, obviously, with impending weather, if Sean Payton was in a position trying to decide who are we going to go with, and then having this cancellation at the last minute before they really head into game prep for week one.
Yeah, I don't really know if this game would have been canceled if there was still a quarterback battle on the line. Maybe they just would have said, hey, fans, for your public safety, don't come, but we need to play football. So what do the Cardinals do now? I mean, they're already in town. So they just, do they just get out of Dodge right now while everybody else is trying to evacuate? I mean, that's something I didn't really consider until this very moment, but it's probably good because this thing sounds like it's going to make landfall pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when they're worried about safety and all of that, like where the Superdome is located, it's probably in southeast Louisiana really as a whole right now. It looks like it's about to get hit pretty hard, so definitely a good heads-up move there for the Saints.
Yeah, and speaking of people who are currently evacuating, you got to think that if the Cardinals touch down, they reevaluate the situation and just say, let's head home. And we'll continue to practice and run through 7-on-7 or 11-on-11 on our own and prepare. But there was a conversation I wanted to revisit before we go to the phone lines and get Mike on here. It was when we talked with Mike Reese, our excellent reporter who covers the New England Patriots, about the situation that has unfolded this week in New England. And my goodness, he's been a busy man because Cam Newton was out of practice. He was participating virtually after a COVID-19 misunderstanding, because he left the New England region to go for a medical appointment that was cleared by the Patriots. He did everything correct. He did not break any team rules or COVID rules, but unfortunately something slipped through the cracks in terms of the testing or the company or the product that was used, and they put him into a five-day cadence. Well, during that time, Mac Jones, who was fighting for that starting position at quarterback, really came into his own in those 3 days. Mike Reese said he had an excellent practice on Wednesday, garnered a ton of respect from his teammates, especially his wide receiving core. So everybody was on pins and needles to see what Cam Newton was going to look like or how he was going to act in his return on Thursday, their final practice that coincided with the New York Giants. And I was really interested with what Mike had to say, Courtney. He said Cam Newton looked like the starters. He took him on a touchdown run. He looked great. He had great energy. And Mac Jones was kind of on the outside looking in after what was 3 days of great work. So many people this week continue to say, well, this is Mac Jones's job to lose now because Cam Newton was holed up at home and couldn't participate in practice. And I never quite knew how I felt about, well, is this really Mac Jones's job to lose? Is this invaluable? Of course it is. He's getting great repetition with the ones right now, but gosh, Cam Newton is still a force. And now that he's had a year to really dive into this offense, you knew that he was going to really make a great play for that starting position. But did it surprise you what Mike said, that Cam Newton came out and re-solidified himself as this team starter?
No, not really. And I remember thinking back to whatever day that was earlier this week that we find out, I think it was Monday, that Cam Newton was going to have to sit out a couple practices and participate virtually while he, you know, basically went in through the re-entry phase of COVID-19 testing. And I think the issue here was that he wasn't, since, you know, he's apparently unvaccinated, since he's not doing the daily testing at the team's facility, which is required in the agreement between the NFL and the NFLPA, that he technically, even though he was getting negative COVID test during the medical visit that was a team-approved visit, he wasn't doing it at the facility. So that, I believe, has something to do with why he lapsed on the testing cadence and all of that. But, you know, Bill Belichick said earlier this week, he was on radio in Boston, that if there's anybody that's going to unseat Cam Newton for this job, they have to be pretty remarkable in what they're doing, because Cam's been in this offense for an entire year now. He's a veteran quarterback. Like, I didn't think that 3 days of practice where Mac Jones was the guy and getting all the reps with the ones, that was going to be enough. But this does leave the door open now, given what the Patriots were able to see with Mac Jones being the only, you know, starting quarterback out there in practice, for when you're ready to make that move in season. You know that this guy has a command of the first team unit. And yeah, he and Cam have split reps throughout camp. I'm not sure exactly what that's going to look like on Sunday during the preseason finale against the New York Giants. Will it be Cam probably starting? You'd like to think so, just given kind of what we saw at the end of the week in practice and Cam be taking the reps with the ones after Mac Jones had been holding down that spot. But they got a good look at Mac Jones. That's what matters here, Katie, because when they were ready to make that switch, whatever the circumstances are that lead them to that conversation, they're going to be able to say, hey, do you remember back at the end of August when this happened? Well, this is what we thought of Mac then. We think he's capable of taking over the reins of the offense now because of that.
Yeah, it laid a foundation, and Mike Reese, our ESPN New England Patriots reporter, said it best. Which I think is only going to pay dividends when the time comes, if they do move on from Cam Newton and they decide to put Mac Jones out as the starter. The relationships, the rapport, the chemistry he created. Yes, he was creating all of that over, you know, the entirety of preseason camp. But when you're the only guy that people are looking to in those moments, those 3 days of practice, I think it's going to be pivotal. Not just for him, but his teammates as well. But when Mac runs out there, whatever that time may be, he can draw from those experiences during those 3 days when he was the guy running the show. But I was happy to hear that Cam came out and he played extremely well in yesterday's practice, because, gosh, you would hate to think that he didn't do anything wrong, Courtney. He did exactly what he was told by New England Patriots personnel, right, when he left the region to go to this medical appointment. He did his job in terms of what that protocol was. You would hate to think that he was just going to be, you know, a culprit of the process, right, a casualty of the process, if you will, that he missed a couple of really crucial days of preseason camp. And in that time, he would lose his starting job to Mac Jones. So I felt for Cam Newton in that moment, because you really didn't want to see it go that way for him, but also happy to see that he went back on Thursday. The room for error was much thinner, right, for Cam Newton to go out there and re-solidify himself as the starting quarterback. But it's good to hear that he felt like he was able to do that in Thursday's practice. They will face the Giants on Sunday in their final preseason game. And then we'll get into actual week one game prep, which I can't believe football is already upon us, which is so exciting, obviously. But you and I are going to be very tired moving forward, going from game to game. Now, down in New Orleans, obviously, Hurricane Ida is on the move. But Sean Payton has officially made the decision that Jameis Winston will be the starting quarterback for week one against the Green Bay Packers. Why did it take Sean Payton so long to make the decision? We'll talk to an expert next. This is ESPN Radio on the ESPN app.
Jhené Angola Jr., the podcast.
Katie George and Courtney Cronin holding it down on Jhené Angola Jr. This show is presented by Career Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear hotline. Our next guest joins us from Louisiana, our ESPN NFL Nation reporter, Mike Triplett. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time. I hope you and everyone down in Louisiana are staying safe as Hurricane Ida approaches land. I guess for starters, could you just give us a state of things as you see it down in Louisiana?
Yeah, thank you for that. Well, things are intensifying sort of by the hour. The storm is not supposed to make landfall until Sunday night, but the projections keep getting a little more daunting. They obviously just canceled the game tomorrow. Earlier today, they had moved it up so it could be done early in the day on Saturday, and now they just decide to cancel it entirely because a lot of areas around New Orleans have had mandatory evacuations, not the city of New Orleans itself yet, but you know, the current projection is for it to be a pretty big storm that hits on Sunday night.
Yeah, really scary situation potentially down there, Mike. I was wondering about the Arizona Cardinals because, you know, teams get to their road location a day before the game is supposed to take place. They are initially thinking it's an 8 p.m. kickoff Central Time, then that gets moved up 8 hours to noon. Have they already left? Do you have any word on kind of what their situation is as they're trying to get out of town at the same time, you know, many people are evacuating?
No, it's a great question, and I don't know for sure that it could be that they were in a holding pattern for even arriving because of the uncertainty. So I don't know. That's a good question that I'll have to follow up on after this.
Well, Mike, if this wasn't enough to keep an eye on, you also had breaking news as Sean Payton announced that Jameis Winston would in fact be the week one starter. What did you make of that news, and why do you think it took him a few days after Jameis's great performance on Monday night against the Jaguars?
Well, I'm sure he probably, if pressed to the fire, he certainly would have been able to pick Jameis, I think, at the end of the first quarter on Monday night, but there was no real rush. I actually thought the reason for the timing today, I was curious to see if his plan was to let the starters come out and play a few series together in this preseason finale, and that certainly might have been disrupted too as the game looked more and more uncertain. Look, I think both guys had a real competition. I think they really both had earned a full and fair evaluation, and I think they were both, playing well enough to deserve, you know, the chances that they got. They took turns with the first string every day in practice all summer. They took turns with the first string in the two preseason games. They both played in each preseason game. But all along, I thought the tie would probably go to Winston. I gave him the slight edge as the front runner going in because he has higher upside, because he's younger, and because you can keep using Taysom Hill in that role he's so good at. And then through 3 weeks of practice, I thought Jameis Winston was slightly ahead, another check mark in his favor. And then obviously he just cemented it with a really outstanding performance on Monday night when he actually had his first start ever as a Saints quarterback.
Mike Triplett, ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the New Orleans Saints, joining us here on Shanae and Golic Jr. via the Goodyear Hotline. Mike, when we talk about the makeup of this offense and what it was at the end of Drew Brees' NFL career, so somebody who was having issues throwing the ball downfield and being able to elongate the passing game, we know that Jameis has a really big arm. And where he's at in his career, maybe taming some of that, given how unruly that ended up getting in Tampa Bay during the final years of his career. We know he can sling it. We know he can throw for 5,000 yards, but he's also, he was pretty turnover prone. What does this mean for what the offense is going to look like with him at the helm at the quarterback position?
Yeah, well, Courtney, I'll take the under on the two most famous numbers of Jameis's career. I'll take the under on the 5,100 yards he threw for in 2019, and I'll take the under on the 30 interceptions he threw that season, which really, unfortunately for him, he's become known for, I think, more than anything else. I think that 30 interception season has become his calling card over the Heisman Trophy and the number one overall pick. And look, Sean Payton has made it clear they're not going to be playing no risk-it, no biscuit in New Orleans. That's not their style. But they have thrown. I mean, Drew Brees has thrown for over 5,000 yards 5 times in his career. He threw 46 touchdown passes 1 year. Sean Payton has a history of letting it fly, and he is going to always use his quarterback strengths to his advantage. So the deep ball will become a big threat in this offense, as will the importance of preaching to Jameis Winston that sometimes the check down is the smartest pass he can make. They've been throwing to running backs for that's one constant in every year of the Saints offense is throwing to running backs. And that's something he'll, have Alvin Kamara right there waiting to do. And then, Michael Thomas as a good option on high percentage throws when he comes back. So I think there's the potential for this to be a great mix. I mean, he's the ultimate unknown, isn't he? And this could go so many different ways, but if you're thinking that there's a potential for like a Ryan Tannehill like renaissance, all the ingredients are in place. The talent that he has combined with this seeming like the perfect place, the perfect coach to play under, the perfect offensive line to play behind, the perfect defense to play with for him to have a chance at success.
Mike, when Tampa moved on from Jameis, I think he easily could have said, poor me, why me, this is unfair. And instead, he took a look in the mirror and he said, I need to be better. Where can I go and get better? And I think that's why he ultimately decided to agree to head to the Saints, play for Sean Payton, sit behind Drew Brees, and learn from one of the best decision makers to play the game. Can you speak to Jameis's personality and the way that his teammates have taken to him over this last year?
Yeah, you have to give him credit for making every right decision since then. He has shown a lot of humility, too, and not just when he talks to the media. I wrote a story earlier this year where I used this clip where he was talking to these high school kids at a camp, and you know, he owns the narrative. I mean, he said, you know, I was the number one overall pick. You go from being the number one overall pick to everybody laughing at you. He knows what the narrative has become. And he said, but I'm still going to be out here outworking everyone. He didn't just come to play for the Saints and play under Drew Brees and Sean Payton, but he also went to new trainers he'd never gone to before, including Brees' longtime trainer, Todd Durkin, Jay Glazer's Unbreakable. Like, you know, he's out there trying to figure out, how can I do things differently? What am I missing? And throughout training camp, the things he's supposed to do, the checkdowns. I think he threw 3 or 4 total interceptions in 4 weeks of practice, and threw to the running backs and the tight ends and the quick short passes a lot, in addition to the deep ball. So he's doing everything right. And yeah, his personality is very unique. He's kind of wacky. He's infectious. He's smiling all the time. That was the first thing that teammates noticed about him. I think in all stops he's been, and teammates have always loved playing with him.
Yeah, well, we're certainly excited to see him take the field for Week 1 against the Green Bay Packers. Mike, thank you so much for the time. We're thinking of you guys these next few days as Hurricane Ida heads towards land. Stay safe, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Great. Mike Triplett, ESPN New Orleans Saints reporter, joining us via the Goodyear Hotline. This Sunday night, baseball preview is brought to you by Samsung Galaxy. Shop the impressive Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 3 5G and Z Flip 3 5G at Samsung.com. Which NFC East team has the best quarterback situation? Courtney Cronin is going to go 4-4-4. Katie George, Courtney Cronin filling in for Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It's almost the weekend. Katie George, Courtney Cronin filling in for Chanae and Golic. Which means, since we're almost to the weekend, Courtney, I wanted to test you because you are an NFL expert on this said show with a segment that I've never done before or ever led. And I don't think that you've ever done it, but I think that it sounded fun. Do you want to talk about the NFC East? Yes or no?
Yes, let's do it.
Good answer. Connor, can I have the sounder?
A-list with no limits.
In the kitchen, cooking, good Lord.
The heat.
As long as it stops at 4.
The heat is on the stove.
444.
For real, though.
With Chanae and Golic Jr.
All right. 444, as it pertains to the NFC East, I would like you to tell me from worst to best, mm-hmm, in total, who you think has the best chance to win the NFC East with their current rosters as is.
Number 4.
Okay. All right, so the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be in for a very, very long season. We know this. We knew this before Nick Sirianni even took over as the head coach when the team parted ways with Doug Peterson this offseason. You know, we haven't seen that much from Jalen Hurts in the regular season last year. I mean, they tried to, you know, throw the game to improve their draft positioning week 17 last year. I don't know if that really helped them all that much. I mean, we will this weekend, though, Katie, finally get to see what that DeVonta Smith-Jalen Hurts connection gets to look like in the preseason finale for the Philadelphia Eagles. But I just think it's going to be a really long season. They don't have a lot of receivers and weapons for Hurts that have more than like 2 years of NFL experience. I think that's going to be a problem. This is not a bold prediction whatsoever, even though there are a lot of Eagles fans who are probably listening right now and hate me for saying that. I think they could probably agree Philadelphia will finish dead last, in spite of having some pieces still on that defense that were actually together the last time this group won a Super Bowl.
What? Philadelphia Eagles fans hating someone or something? No way. I do want to ask you, for Jalen Hurts, do you feel like he could have a long-term career with this team?
I think we're going to find out pretty quickly this season just like how good he is, even in spite of what's lacking around him. He's put into a tough situation, but the only way you're going to find out is by getting thrown into the fire, right? Like, there's never a good chance, never a good time to say, okay, I'm fully ready to assume the reins of this offense. You just got to go at some point. And so this is his time, his moment to show Nick Sirianni and the rest of the decision makers that, yeah, even in spite of some pretty lackluster circumstances, I can make the most out of what I'm given. So we'll find out this season, that's for sure.
All right, fair enough. I love it. Great analysis. Who do you got for number three?
Number three.
Hey, Connor, give me a second.
Number three.
Okay, there we go. I have the New York Giants at number three, and I would have put them a lot higher in my rankings had the offensive line been not an issue in training camp. To me, this is probably the biggest problem with this team because on the periphery, you have a lot of weapons. You get Kenny Golladay in there. You've got Evan Ingram. You acquire Kyle Rudolph in free agency. You know, there's so much. Kadarius Toney, their first round wide receiver who hasn't really done anything in the preseason. I don't know. But Daniel Jones, who's entering a really pivotal year for himself in year three, you know, to figure out, are they going to pick up my fifth-year option? Am I going to be the long-term option at quarterback here? You know, kind of running on borrowed time, and I just don't know what's going to happen with that group up front. They've been injured as all get-out during the preseason, and it's a problem. It's the reason that Daniel Jones has not played in any preseason games to date, so we'll see. I mean, maybe they can get carried by their defense yet again. They exceeded expectations last year. They really were a really strong unit. I love Azeez Ojulari as a draft pick for them and what that's going to pan out to be. But I'm worried about everything that's been an issue for New York ever since they began this rebuilding phase in their offensive line like six seasons ago and haven't been able to get it right.
Yeah, and you just hope that they can make moves in terms of progress up front because I felt like the Giants put money where their mouths are, right, in terms of getting Daniel Jones playmakers, especially in the receiving core. Now it's up to Daniel Jones, even with a banged-up offensive line, to go out there and prove himself or else he's going to be in a situation much like Mitch Trubisky found himself a season ago and he might be looking for a new home. So hopefully they can get it together up there. Who do you got at number two?
Number two.
Wait, there it is. See, we're not going to like run through. Okay, I've heard it twice now. Can I get it again? No?
Number two.
Thank you. I've got the Dallas Cowboys at number two because
okay.
And it doesn't have anything to do with the offensive side of the ball. Like, I think Dak will be okay with the shoulder injury and the ankle injury. Would we have liked to have seen him in the preseason just to make sure he's comfortable in the pocket with, you know, bodies around his ankle that's been surgically repaired not once but twice? Yeah, we would. But circumstances with the shoulder kept that from happening. They're loaded at a wide receiver. Ezekiel Elliott's primed for another really good season. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about the defense for this group because they didn't really make a whole ton of strides there in the offseason in terms of free agency. I mean, yeah, you got Micah Parsons, you know, early in the draft, but I don't know if they've done enough, and I don't know. Coaching can only go so far. Like, they fired Mike Nolan. They brought in Dan Quinn. That's great. And new scheme and players seem to be buying into it, but how much is that going to carry your defense up the rankings and magically fix it within the process of one season when you truly haven't upgraded your personnel that much? That's where I see being the biggest issue for the Dallas Cowboys.
Very fair, which means the Washington football team is
number one.
They are. Their defense is absolutely loaded. You know, Chase Young is a terrific player. He was so good last year. You know, you've got Landon Collins, your Pro Bowl safeties back, Cole Holcomb leading the linebacking core. Like, the quarterbacks here with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's, you know, on his 50th team in his career, and you've got Taylor Heinicke behind him, they were fun to watch in the postseason last year.
Yeah, they were.
That little run that they went on. But this team is going to be bolstered down by its defense. And I think that they've probably got the best defense in the NFC East. And that's probably what's going to lead them to the top of the standings. Although it is the NFC East, I want to throw caution to the wind here. Don't expect anybody to be winning 11 games. this is a division not long ago that was decided by a division winner with losing record. Like, so that could very well happen again this year. It's called the NFC least for a reason, but I do think that Washington is primed to jump Dallas. I know a lot of odds makers out there will probably put Dallas first, but I'm just really not so sure about that defense.
I don't know for what it's worth or if this matters, but I think we absolutely crushed our first 444.
We did.
I just stayed out of the way and let you do the heavy lifting. Well done. Excellent analysis. It only took me 2.5 hours to notice that incredible lava lamp.
Lava nice,
lamp over your shoulder. So when we return, we are going to keep that same energy and discuss that said lava lamp. This is ESPN Radio on the ESPN app.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Do we think J.R. Smith plagiarized and just wrote the lyrics of this song down in his English class now that he is actually enrolled in college? I'm learning so many different things. I'm learning about J.R. I'm learning that you, Courtney Cronin, like lava lamps. I'm learning that Connor Burks is leaving us on ESPN to take a different job. I had no idea tomorrow is his last day. Congratulations, Connor. We will certainly miss you. I also learned that Janae Golic Jr. is brought to you by the Bank of America Customized Cash Rewards Credit Card. Earn their 3% back cash on online shopping. Copyright 2021 Bank of America Corporation. Courtney, I'm sorry that it took me so long to appreciate the lava lamp behind you.
That's okay.
Where did it come from? I don't know if we can see it at this point because we're not. Take me down, please, television, and just put Courtney wide so we see that lovely candle / lava lamp. That takes me back.
The rose candle and the lava lamp actually came from a white elephant gift exchange a few years ago at Christmas time. Now, people might be saying, well, why would you, you know, get that one for the white elephant? Isn't that supposed to be the fun gift, or the nice gift, not the fun gift? Well, that is a nice gift. And so that keeps me company during every show I do for ESPN Radio out of my home office, because, you know, especially when I'm doing Freddie and Fitzsimmons late at night, 8 to midnight here, Central Time, and I'm just like dragging at 11 p.m., like, all right, let me look over at this mesmerizing thing and, you know, keep myself going. So that lava lamp has been part of many ESPN Radio shows over like the last 2 years.
I love it. It makes me nostalgic. It makes me think of slinkies, you know, like going down the stairs, as well as yo-yos. I think it's the perfect
koosh ball. That's the first thing that I thought of when you brought up slinkies.
Absolutely.
That I had in the back of my door of my childhood room.
As did I. And I think that your lava lamp is the perfect segue into keep that same energy.
We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
I got to give credit where credit's due and a shout out to a Louisville graduate, Angel McCautry. Not sure if you saw this, Courtney, but on Thursday, she returned to Atlanta where she played for a decade in the WNBA for the first time as a member of the Aces. And so McCautry suffered a season-ending ACL injury in May, but they provided her with a pretty special moment in front of the Dream fans. With 7.9 seconds left, she came into the game amid a standing ovation, of course, and went to the far left corner of the court, received a pass from teammate Jackie Young, and she took an uncontested shot just inside the arc. It rimmed out, but was rebounded by the Dream's Tiffany Hayes, who then gave her former teammate a huge hug. And so it was just a really nice moment. Angel McCautry was somebody I grew up watching here in the Louisville local community. She was phenomenal as a college player and obviously has had a phenomenal professional career. But good on the Dream, the Atlanta Dream, for allowing that moment to take place, because I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that was a really neat gesture for them to honor her in that way, in spite of, you know, kind of everything that's happened with her injury and all of that. I think that was really neat. Stephen Curry and his wife Aisha Curry are launching a scholarship with Davidson College. That's where Steph went to school and starred in the Final Four. And this is an initiative to support Davidson female athletes. They're giving an undisclosed amount that will support more than 200 female athletes at Davidson College. The goal is to have an immediate impact on being able to bring those athletes to the forefront of college athletics. In an Instagram video, Steph Curry and and his wife Aisha announcing it, they captioned it, in part, "This one hits home," and Curry noting the role that the women in his life have played and just how far he's gotten, talked about his two daughters, Ryan and Riley. I thought that was a really cool gesture in order to advance women's college athletics at Davidson College. And then Philip Rivers, retired NFL QB Philip Rivers, for how long, we don't know if he'll get the itch to come back, but as of right now, he is 1-0 as a high school football coach. His St. Michael's team got the win on Thursday night, a 49-0 victory for the St. Michael Catholic Cardinals.
And
it's pretty good. It's early in the season, so I'm not really sure what their non-conference schedule looks like, but dominating victory in every form and fashion. And it was just cool hearing Philip Rivers talk about it afterwards. I watched the video and it brought me back to my days covering Mississippi high school football. And yeah, I didn't see NFL quarterback Philip Rivers there. I saw a high school football coach who was talking about, a lot of these guys aren't going to go on to play at the next level, play professionally. They might have a few that go on to play college football, but, relishing in the best days of your football career or going to be in high school. And he talked about some of his days, and I just thought that was a really neat side of Philip Rivers that we got to see. And I'm looking forward to his second victory because he was long-winded and he was great after it.
He looked the part too, with the cap,
yes,
the polo, yep, as well as the headset. I thought he actually looked like he had been doing it for many years. What's crazy to me is he and his wife should have thought about it a little bit better. Had they had just two more children, they could have created their own entire offense,
their own football
or
team,
defense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They've got 9 children, just 2 more. Have twins. You know what? Have a set of twins and you're there. You could field your own football team on either side. I'm not sure if you saw this. Actually, I'm sure you saw this. Everybody's seen this at this point, that J.R. Smith has gone back to college, 2-time mm-hmm. NBA champion. He is now enrolled at North Carolina A&T, and he is a member of the men's golf team, the NCAA. Still whatever they're doing in Indianapolis, ruled that he is now eligible since he did not go to college and went straight to the league. But he tweeted this last night, "Finished my English homework. Dope short story about a little girl with 6 brothers and seeking parents' approval. Dope reading with the 3-book emoji." And here's what I've got to say. I think it's so cool that he's going back to get an education. Also, it's very cool that he's going to play golf as well and be a member of that team. Mm-hmm. Could you imagine, though, if you were in English 101 as a freshman, you just got to North Carolina A&T, you're so excited, you can't wait to make friends and meet new classmates, and you go into your first lecture hall and you sit down and you're seated next to J.R. Smith? Could you imagine?
I mean, I'd be like, oh, so you're the guy from the meme. You're the guy from the meme where LeBron's shaking his hands and yelling at you.
Yeah.
That's
what the college students are probably going to know him most for, not the fact that he had a great NBA
long-storied NBA career.
Yep. Yeah, without a doubt. Oh, so fun getting to catch up with you, Courtney. Thank you so much.
Too.
Best of luck moving forward into the NFL season. Spain and Fitz are next on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Enjoy Fridays.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.